So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we'll be talking about the Kindle Scribe that Sherlyn just reviewed on the site. We'll also be diving into some Twitter clones that have been popping up all over the place. Honestly, things have been growing up really quickly, and it's going to be a fun discussion because there are way too many, and I feel like that's worth a chat. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. You can always drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We also typically do a live stream on our YouTube channel Thursday mornings around 10 a.m. Eastern. We also sometimes do it around 11 a.m. Eastern. You know what? Just follow us on Twitter. I'm at Devendra. Sherlyn is at Sherlyn Lowe, and we'll usually put updates there. So the Kindle Scribe is finally here, Sherlyn. I think a lot of us were very excited about this thing because it's Amazon getting into writable e-ink. You know, there have been a couple other e-ink tablets like this. There's the Remarkable 2. There are a lot of like random ones from Chinese companies as well. But this is the big one from Amazon. What do you think? Because you seem pretty positive in your review.
I mean, I'll tell you this. When I was assigned to review it, I was like, whoa, it's me? Because like you said, everybody was very excited for this thing, right? Everyone on our team was like raising their own hands. Like, I'll do it. I volunteer as tribute.
And I was like, thinking, it's cool. Sherlyn? She doesn't like e-readers. What? She doesn't love Kindles.
Excuse me? I love Kindles. Uh-huh. What are you talking about? But here's the other thing too. Like writing, I'm one of the people, well, I'm of the age where like I grew up writing, right? I grew up writing pen and paper or pencil and paper. And a lot of like mind mapping was part of my learning process growing up. I don't know if like American people used mind maps growing up.
I mean, you also grew up in an age where there were more devices and things to do mind mapping, but it was a thing.
Oh, no, yeah. I did pen and paper. I did markers, paper. Colorful things.
It was not a thing we talked about very often, but we talk about brainstorming and things like that. Yeah.
Doing all that stuff, I don't have to belabor the point, but a lot of us like find writing, like the physical act of writing, a good way to kind of like remember things, right? So that's why I was pretty hyped for this as well. And I will say, yeah, in general, I really like the writing experience. That's not to say the Kindle Scribe doesn't have a lot of flaws. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that there's not a lot of better alternatives out there. But I think as an e-reader and writer combo, because of its strengths as an e-reader, this thing shines. This thing's like really good. And we can like get more into it. I just want to like, I know the review video went up yesterday and a lot of people were like, why didn't you compare it like more to the Remarkable 2? And I know that that's like its direct competitor.
And have you played with the Remarkable 2 at all?
Not at all, enough. Yeah. Only like briefly in passing, because why? Mm-hmm. Chris Velasco, former Engadget reporter, took it with him when he left Engadget, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, also,
and he was the one who reviewed it for
It's
us
a device I wanted to play more with, but that Remarkable requires a subscription. That is ridiculous. It is so expensive.
It's also, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. And then that Remarkable tablet itself costs around $270 as a base. And then you have to add the pen, which is another $100-ish. So that puts it a little bit more expensive than the Kindle Scribe to start, which like, as a non-e-reader, it does have better software, I will say. Like it has like better syncing and like note-taking software from what I've heard or what I've seen from the research I've done. Again, having not used it myself, I can't give you like a super in-depth comparison. But we could try to do that. We could call it in and have like an e-reader, e-writer kind of a guide. So
this is bigger than a typical Kindle too, right? It has a bigger screen. So it should be better for reading in addition to being able to write
Hells
on it. Yeah. Did you find that useful?
It's got a 10.2-inch screen. So I took this on the plane with me when I went to San Francisco for Thanksgiving. And I read a book called Blackout by Aaron Flanagan. I mean, I didn't set it to any like special setting. I just used it the way it was set up right out of the box. So it started to like default font sizes and stuff. And I could see obviously more text on screen. I also found it easy to use with one hand because it's got like I don't know if people like this, but it's got a pretty thick bezel on the long side, which is,
They do that for holding. Hand. Yeah. So you're not like touching the screen. Yeah.
A lot of e-readers do that. Yeah. So there's a lot of e-readers that do that, whether it's the long side or short side that has the fat bezel, but some people I remember seeing their like comments, they were like, oh, I don't like this, why is the bezel so thick? I'm like, because you want to hold on to
and
it,
so that's the premium Kindles too, like the Kindle, was it the Voyage or whatever, the like higher end ones, they always had that Oasis bezel. Yeah, the Oasis.
And even some Nooks, like or Kobos, Kobo Aura, Kobo, like some of their e-readers. I have some more experience with Kobo e-readers than I do, say, like an e-ink writing tablet. So, I didn't do a lot of comparison straight to like a Kobo e-reader in my review, but I think it's a well-known fact that Kindles are among the best out there.
If you don't mind like all the problems around Amazon, like that's the thing, like... I like the hardware.
That's the thing.
I don't like Amazon as a company and sort of the way they're kind of taking over ebooks in general too. How is the writing? Because we're looking at the video too here. Yeah. You can check this out in Trillin's review. It looks pretty smooth. It looks pretty responsive. Does it actually feel like pen to paper?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, like some people were asking me the screen scratches or like just the overall sensation. Because the screen is matte, unlike say like a Galaxy Tab or like iPad, you don't have... The feeling of smoothness is a little different. It feels smooth, and yet it still sort of has that matte finish that paper in real life obviously has. So it's very realistic and comfortable, also very responsive. I don't even know the exact number as to the latency, how many milliseconds, and the screen refresh rate. Screen refresh rate is obviously slow, right? Because this is e-ink tablet display, so it's gonna refresh every once in a while, but as you're writing, the inking does come out very, very quickly. It's almost instantaneous.
That's pretty interesting, because before, when you would try to like make a mark or something on a Kindle screen, like it would take a while. There's certainly a delay and it still seems like there's a delay in the whole page refresh, but I guess as you're writing, it's faster. That's unique.
Yes. Okay. And I suspect that the technology has to do with the pen itself is built in to respond to a different part of the screen, right? Like maybe the digitizer layer is just more responsive or something like that. Yeah. Right? Yeah, because but that helps with things like palm rejection, because you know, finger and palm triggers on the screen don't register as quickly, partly because of screen refresh, partly because maybe they built in palm rejection. But to the point where like I could leave my entire palm on the screen and write and have, you know, no marks show up anywhere but where the pen is touching the screen. So it is clearly the way this like system is built. It's the connection between the nib or the eraser and the digitizer layer that is making the marks show up or disappear. But I did feel like when I, you know, dragged my palm across the screen sometimes when I was writing, I accidentally triggered like a page turn once or twice. So I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it's pretty good.
That kind of makes sense. Does this only work with the Amazon pen, or can you use like other styluses?
So for $340, the basic bundle comes with a basic pen. So you got the 10.2 inch tablet and a basic pen. The difference between the basic pen and the premium pen that we received is...
There's a premium pen, okay.
Yeah, the premium pen has an eraser, dedicated eraser at the top. And this is like, obviously it's all software. It's not like an actual eraser with dust. But you flip it over and it makes erasing things very easy. And then it's got a shortcut button on the body of the pen itself near the nib.
Which is,
I found the placement.
That's exactly what Microsoft did. Remember with the Surface pens, like that had the eraser.
Oh, most styluses.
Yeah, most styluses, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, what is the price difference between the basic and the premium pen?
I was going to say, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I think it's $30 more for the premium pen. But you know, Amazon includes the basic pen with its basic bundle price of $340. So
they want you to buy the other pen because you're probably going to want to have multiples in case you lose a stylus or something, right?
I guess. I mean, speaking of this, the pen, whether it's the basic or the premium, it'll attach magnetically to the edge of the tablet. And I found the magnets pretty strong. I never felt like I was going to lose. Well, I did lose my pen when I threw it in my purse without the cover.
Where's my pen? You're kind of just relying on that. Yeah,
so that's why you want the case. But speaking of the case, this case, okay, I will admit that I threw out the box after I took out the case and I didn't look at the instructions as to how to prop it up. But when me and Chris Velasco, because I saw him in San Francisco, we got together and we were like reviewing testing out the Scribe together, and I was asking him for his thoughts and stuff, and I was like, how do you use this damn case? And him and I struggled to figure it out for like 30 minutes, and we couldn't find a good configuration to prop it up in. And then when we were shooting the review video, I also asked our video producer, Joelle, and I was like, hey, if you can figure it out on camera, please figure it out. Like, do it and tell me how to use it. And they couldn't figure it out either. And then I asked Amazon before we even shot the video, like, how we're supposed to use this case. And because it was like holidays and Thanksgiving, no one was really around to respond until like a little too late. And so after the video, so in the video, I still do like complain a lot about it.
It should be intuitive. I will say that, like, it should make sense.
It should.
Yeah. So that is a user experience problem over there. Yeah.
I will say after adding the instructions, it's not like it's that much easier. Like, you have to flip it so that the, like, half of it is propping up and then the other half of it is, like, on the back of the tablet.
It's one of those origami type cases. So Amazon, Amazon's used these before and they've always sucked. So, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
It's too flimsy is part of the reason it doesn't work very well. If, like, it had magnets to kind of assist in it, it might be better. I don't know. We'll see. But I don't want to...
Yeah. My real question is, like, do you want to keep using this thing? Or would you rather just have a dedicated e-reader where you don't have to worry about, like, actually writing on it?
I love the fact that it can take in stylus input. I think, first of all, the experience is amazing. I think I've just gotten better at my Japanese handwriting since I realized I have forgotten how to write the basic Japanese alphabet, which is like my hiragana, and which is like even just the a, I, u, e, o, which is like the ABCDs, right? I forgot how to write most of them. So I spent a lot of this review kind of practicing, and I sent a picture of it to Matt Smith on our team because he's fluent in Japanese. And he was like, oh, this one's good, that one's bad. And I was like, great. So I feel like I did enjoy that. I also made a lot of lists. So without my lists, I'm one of those people that without my list, I am lost, right? That's where the Kindle Scribe really falls short, in my opinion. The software here, atrocious. Amazon, come the hell on. You can do better. So these notes that you write down in your notebooks section of the Kindle, they sync automatically to the Kindle app, which you have to use to set up the device anyway, right? So when you scroll over to your Kindle app, you can go under settings or more and look for notebooks. You'll see them show up there as individual images. You can't edit them on your phone. Yeah. You can't edit them elsewhere. There's no handwriting recognition to convert shit to text. Samsung Notes does that.
And I assume there's no integration with like Evernote or anything like that. There's no integration
to anything. Not yet. Okay. So my suspicion, and I can't say it's my understanding, my suspicion is that I think Amazon will push an update later, maybe like January next year, to push through some additional third-party support features. Yeah. Like, for
you
example,
you want OneNote. You want Evernote.
I think there's some kind of
something.
Yeah, there's some kind of Google integration, I think, that might be coming. None of this is like stuff I've heard officially from Amazon. I think it's a little bit of hearsay on my part. But yeah, no, this is the stuff that even here's the thing, right? They need to figure out how they're exporting these things to these third-party apps. Yeah. Because if they're exporting it as a PDF, which is what they tell you, they're like, you can export it to a PDF and use an editor. Who? I can't edit PDF on Evernote handwriting.
That's so useless. Like, and that kind of shows like this is a problem with a lot of Amazon devices, and I'd say Google devices too. Like, they don't think past the initial whiz bang part of the user experience to like, okay, so I have all these images or I have all these notes. Like, how do I work with them? How do I live with them? How do I incorporate them into my daily workflow? I guess, yeah, they still don't have that. I mean, one story we had this week that we didn't get to talk about last week is Amazon reported that it's on pace to lose $10 billion from its Alexa division and other devices division. I believe that includes Kindle, but they have a lot of problems with devices in general and with software, so this just seems like another part of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Amazon is not the strongest software company. We've seen it suffer with its Halo fitness devices. We've seen it Kindle, like,
Fire
even
phone.
I even complained. Yeah, the Fire Phone. I even complained in my review that like the Kindle interface is so dated. It needs, I get that it's for e-ink and it refreshes slow, but come on, to X out of my notebook and go to a different notebook, I had to go back to the notebooks page and then select a new notebook and then wait. Like, it's just too many steps. There's a lot of things that can be done to improve the Kindle Scribe. I think though that the good news is most of those issues are software based. A lot of the hardware itself, I mean, this is a stunning Kindle. Like, it's thin, light, super thin. It's like I can't remember the exact number now. It's so many numbers in my head, but it's so sleek. It's got it's 0.95 pounds. It's very light.
Pretty light, because if you want just an e-reader only Kindle, I think you could get like down to half that weight. Like, you can get it super,
for sure,
super light.
But don't forget, this is 10.2 inch. It's a 10.2 inch screen. So for the size, it's got surprisingly a lightweight, you know, it's a lightweight, and also it didn't flex too much, which I think is good. I did put it on the back of my airplane seat and lean back against it because I like to hide these tablets away from the flight attendants.
Why?
Yeah, what? I mean, because technically, I guess one time someone on a British Airways flight yelled at me for holding on to a thing, and they were like, put this away, put it on the overhead. I'm like, no, I'm going to be separated from this. So.
And that's wrong. They're just wrong, anyway. But whatever.
They're wrong, the Brits I know, are wrong. But now I've been gaslit.
So, yeah, would you buy this, Sherlyn? Like, that is my question, because I'm also in the market for a new Kindle.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, mm-hmm. And I also feel like with these software issues...
Here's the other thing. I like it for, like, a notepad replacement, because I'm the sort of person that doesn't like loose leaves of paper lying around, but I tend to have them anyway. And the other thing is, it's not water resistant.
It's not. That's a deal breaker. Is that because of the writing screen ability? They couldn't put in the waterproofing layer?
Yeah, I have no real answer for the why. I will say it's unlike most of the other e-readers, or most of the other Kindles, with the exception of the base Kindle. The rest of them are all IPX8 or something like that.
Because people want to read in the bathtub. I think the dream for a lot of people is, I want to be sitting in the bathtub and have all of my books, and I just want to, like, not worry about this device breaking or something. So,
or take it to the beach, sure, or wherever. Take it to, you know, or read and then outdoors and not worry about rain. I mean, I think this will withstand some droplets of water.
Maybe the beach. The beach trick for everybody is get some big Ziploc bags and put your tablet or whatever in those, because you don't want sand anywhere. No matter if you have water resistance, sand will...
Dust and grist is the worst.
Yeah, will screw up all of your devices, so... Yeah. So it seems like a mixed bag for you, Sherlyn, on this, but you mostly like it.
I really did. I will say, yeah, the question of whether I would buy it for myself is that $340 is a lot to pay for, like, a folder and or an e-reader in one. But the fact that it's lacking the water resistance, the battery life is pretty decent. I mean, you're supposed to get up to 3 weeks on a charge if you're writing about a half hour a day. So that's pretty good. I mean, it's not the same as a Kindle that only does reading, but this, you have to think, if you're writing nonstop for a bit, it's draining the screen. The pen itself doesn't need a charge, which is pretty nice. And I guess the last thing I want to say is, like, I think I might have been maybe a bit too forgiving on hindsight of Amazon, because I was
these software issues sound bad. Like, this does not sound like a device I could recommend to people. Even if it works.
I would. Basically. I mean, no, I can recommend. Yeah. So I did talk to a biomedical engineering professor who was very intrigued by the device. And he was like, oh, but he wants to highlight things in colors. Yeah. And I was like, oh, right. No, that's not for you. You got to use an iPad. So don't forget, this is e-ink. The other thing is, the last thing I wanted to say about this device. Oh, no. Okay. Back to the point I was making, which is that I thought I was too easy on Amazon on hindsight. I the software issues I kind of, like, brushed past because I thought maybe it's like e-ink makes things harder. But I also think that they could have stood to, like, they waited so long to release this
They've
thing.
Been working
they could
with
have
e-ink
stood to
so
work
long.
On the software.
Exactly.
Yeah, they could have worked on the software a little harder before they released this. So no, I think Amazon, step it up. Come
step
on.
It up. Yeah, I try to. You got to judge products as we have them, not as a company say, oh, we'll fix this down the line. And it's a shame. So anyway, that's the Kindle Scribe. Sherlyn mostly likes it, but it seems there are some issues. This feels like a device that will be discounted pretty quickly. Like, I don't
hope
so maybe if it's $100 off or more or something, then all of a sudden it's maybe more appealing. At that point, you can just suffer. If it's under $200, it's like, okay, if it doesn't sync as well, if it doesn't do as many things as you'd like, maybe then it's a little more appealing. I'm intrigued, but I still want the Remarkable 2. To me, that thing looks sleeker. Like, it just looks like a better product. It looks more like an Apple product than, I hate Amazon's product design. Like, so much of the time. So I wish Remarkable didn't have that freaking subscription, but I think they make you pay for that for the cloud syncing, for a lot of, like, things it needs to use. So I guess we'll see. But you know what, Sherlyn, where can people send you email if they have questions about this thing?
Yeah, tell me things you want me to write that are very, very PG rated. Send them to, I guess, podcast@engadget.com.
There you go. And hit us up on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, I think it is worth talking a bit about what is happening here. I'm not going to focus as much on the Elon Musk shitstorm, which is just getting worse and worse.
Constant.
The most recent thing is, like, a lot of, like, banned accounts have been put back on. That's great. COVID-19 misinformation, fully allowed because
no longer
a problem. But anyway, it does seem like a lot of people are considering alternatives. We've talked about Mastodon, which is the open source, sort of distributed Twitter clone that's been around for several years. I've been surprised to see a lot of new things just really pop off really quickly, too. Like, have you heard of Hive Social, Sherlyn?
I've been on Hive Social for
She's
a bit,
been
yeah.
on Hive. I mean...
I've been on Hive.
Hive Social, an app that really had no standing before all this Twitter mess, but apparently founded by a 24-year-old. It has two other engineers. Like, it's a handful of people running this app, which now has over 2 million users. And it is weird how this started happening. Like, I'm not sure what the initial spark was, but I noticed among certain subgroups. So among my, like, the people I follow in the video game journalism industry, so those people... people start going over to Hive. Some of the people in film journalism that I follow, same thing. They start going over to Hive. And meanwhile, there are other folks, like more mainstream journalists, they were leaning towards Post, which is another...
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. Another... both of these things look very much like Twitter. I think Hive is a little more colorful and cutesy. Hive is kind of going for a cross between Tumblr and Twitter, I think. Like, it is...
Yeah. And MySpace.
And MySpace. Like, it feels like a step back. Host is a weird thing because right now it's just a website and you have to sign up for a waitlist to join.
Is it like a Substack?
It's not a Substack. It is straight up like a Twitter type of thing. And what's interesting is it's founded by Noam Barden, the guy who founded Waze. So whenever like a successful entrepreneur tries a new thing, people are like, okay, I'm going to pay attention. What's interesting is that Post is getting a lot of support from mainstream journalists, so I'm seeing people talk about that more. Also, people like within media, you have to sign up for a waitlist to get in. There's a sort of like gatekeeping attitude towards it too. And I'm not fully sure how this platform works because you get Post credits when you join, and you can buy more credits. I believe you could spend them to read some premium articles. Like it is, I think it's like the idea is like, what if you could build Twitter from the beginning? More focused on media and also around the idea of like making money and, you know, compensating for media, which is kind of appealing. But even this one like has some issues, which is kind of funny. I think the initial launch post from Noam Barden, a lot of people were pointing out there's a quote in the original post that says, "We believe that all humans are created equal, endowed with unalienable rights that include life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." That sounds familiar. Regardless of their gender, religion, ethnicity, race, sexual orientation, net worth, or beliefs. That protected class of people, like...
Net worth. Just
gonna sneak that in there. Don't make fun of rich people. We have feelings, too. That's what it really sounds like. That post has since been edited. So now net worth has been taken out. I think after a lot of people were like, what the hell are you talking about? This is ridiculous. But that.
Do you think they were trying to say like socioeconomic backgrounds
Maybe. But if you say that, you say that. You don't say
it's a whole
net
thing.
Worth. The people who say net worth are the people who have net worth.
Who have net worth.
Worth talking about or like worth, you know, having feelings about. So the thing.
I'm sorry. I'm a poor person. My net worth is a dollar.
My net worth, not so much. What is funny is that a lot of people are saying like, you know, this is a startup that is funded by A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz, right? And, you know, they were also behind Clubhouse. And remember that whole wave of like, oh, my God, audio meeting rooms. This is going to be the next wave of everything. It's something we were all at the beginning of the pandemic because
they got copied to death.
And also, I think, made more useful on Twitter, like ironically, because...
Absolutely.
Clubhouse was a weird, literally like a country clubhouse of elite people just talking to themselves in their own like little bubbles. I think that is the danger with Post. You can't easily search for people or follow people. I see people put their profiles up on Twitter and I can like go follow them in there through that. There's no Post app. It's just a website right now. So this is like high profile enough that people are just talking about it. Like, that's the main thing because it's Noam. So it's Post, it's Hive Social, Mastodon.
Well, yeah. You mentioned Hive Social. Can we quickly talk about Hive Social being like some kind of like they're stealing your data or something? Because I saw
there,
that come
so,
up.
Okay. So Hive Social, after it got super popular and really being run on a shoestring budget by a few people, last night I saw a post saying, hey, we noticed some security issues and we're just going to like stop. We're just going to like be offline for a bit. So they're going to be offline for a couple days because it's literally a couple people in a closet keeping this whole thing together. I'm not surprised there's security issues. So that's the other thing. Like, but yeah, Hive Social is currently offline after being so funny. What do you think of Hive, Sherlyn? Because I think you got to spend more time there.
Yeah, I've been on Hive for like, I want to say, since all the Twitter stuff first started going down. So maybe a couple weeks or three. It never really works very well for me because, like you said, it's run by two people in a closet somewhere. Maybe they have two servers running the entire thing and it just couldn't handle all the traffic it was starting to get. So nothing. I mean, I follow also people on my Mastodon and Hive, which I don't actually use that much anymore. They're like, oh, I see you follow only three people. Is it interesting for you in here? I'm like, yeah, I follow three people who I know. I only follow people I know. And then it's people that, you know, some of them, you know, post more, but it means I doom scroll a lot less. I'm a lot less on these apps.
that is the plus.
So yeah, that's my experience.
That's the plus for all of
us. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's the thing a lot of us are seeing. One thing I've noticed that I think a lot of groups are just like breaking off into other networks, right? So maybe a certain group of people are going to be using Post, a certain group of people are going to be using Hive Social. It is a breakup of what was so special about Twitter, which is not great. We've talked about Mastodon as well, and I spent a little more time there. I hate the design. I hate that it can't do as many things as Twitter can do. It's really hard to find people. And also, there have been reports from several people, especially people working within social justice, who are saying like, oh, their posts have been taken down, you know, or they've been messaged because of the content of their posts, and all their posts are talking about are maybe things like white privilege and things like institutional racism. With Mastodon, you are basically beholden to whoever's managing the server you're on. So there is no, you know, greater company dealing with content moderation. And those people can also read your direct messages. It's not a great solution if you're not on a server you trust too. So we are just in the Wild West right now. I don't know. I know you love social apps, Sherlyn. I feel like we're joining a lot of these just to secure our usernames. That is why you'll find me on Mastodon. You'll find me on Hive Social just because I want to keep my username in case any of these things actually pop off. I don't think they're ever going to be a Twitter level type company.
And do you think Twitter's going away?
I think Twitter is becoming a mess. And I think what we're seeing, and there's a lot of reports here too, that basically Elon Musk has a cabal of right-wing trolls that he's listening more to when it comes to the decisions he's making. He is banning and certainly heavily moderating left-wing accounts and voices now too. Twitter is a mess, but also I think as a platform, it is still the single most interesting and useful social network to me. So I'm going to be on it until, you know, to see what's happening. A couple of weeks ago, there was a night where a lot of people thought that Twitter would just like fall apart the next day, or like it would be the last day
because everyone was quitting.
Like we knew there wasn't enough support staff. So there was one of the kind of wildest internet experiences I've seen out there is that there was a Twitter space hosted by Katie Natopoulos, and a whole bunch of like tech journalists and media people were on there. And Neil Dash was there. And at a certain point, I was listening for like several hours. Ben Ullman, our producer, was kind enough to record and transcribe that. So I'm sure he'll have a link up on his Twitter feed so you can go check that out. But it was a really interesting conversation that involved a lot of things. Like it was both silly and poignant and people talking about their feelings about Twitter. There was the guy who posted every time he masturbated. Like he was there, but also people talking about like what something like Twitter means for social justice and for, you know, groups that are using a platform like Twitter to communicate. And everybody was just like pouring a drink out for Twitter. So I listened to this thing for like 2 or 3 hours. I poured a drink, you know, for myself for, you know, just to pour one out for Twitter. But up to 20,000 people, over 20,000 people were listening to this Twitter space at one point. And that's fascinating. You know, that was more people, more staff, more people than Twitter actually had as staff at that point. It's wild. It kind of shows like how this platform can also bring people together to really talk about things. There was a lot of discussion about how Twitter is useful to people with disabilities. A lot of subgroups, a lot of like communities that don't normally get a voice can use Twitter to really get their, you know, message out there. And I think losing it is going to be a big problem for the world. That's kind of where I stand. Like I'm going to keep an eye on things until it falls apart. I don't know if you feel strongly, Sherlyn, like to me, it is still the purest expression of the internet, I'd say.
I wouldn't go so far as to call it the purest expression of the internet. In my mind, the purest expression of the internet is a GeoCities website from late 97.
I mean,
but
what do you mean by pure? Because I couldn't talk to anybody on the planet. Like, I couldn't immediately reach out to somebody else who's using the platform.
I guess I'm interpreting pure expression of the internet as like someone displaying their like likes and dislikes.
That's
like,
what,
a very pure
that's
form,
what you're
not
doing
necessarily
on Twitter.
Which is a conduit for a conversation. It's to
you're
me
displaying
a
your likes,
but anyway,
your feed is the same thing.
We're arguing definitions at this point.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sure Sherlyn, like,
I was gonna say something
go,
else, but
go,
yeah.
go.
I was just gonna say that, like, I'm like you. I'm sticking around on Twitter until they pull the plug. Not for any specific reason, just because I enjoy interacting with people, like you said. But also, like you said, it's becoming more of a trash heap the way that it used to be in the early days, before all the moderation started happening. A lot of the, I mean, it's starting to become a place where people love to just give me advice, assuming I don't know things. And I'm just like,
that's always been the thing. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's always been, it got better. And then now it's like less. And I'm just like, has this got anything to do with like the quality of people on Twitter now? I don't know. I'm also, like you said, a very social person, and I do enjoy being on Instagram still. So I'll still be there. But yeah, you're
see
Hive,
you,
Mastodon, and Post are not.
I see
it.
You on Be Real. I see like a bunch of people actually know
on
Be Real. I feel like Be Real is like this nice little.
Be Real is fun.
It's fun, although completely superfluous, but also the place where I can share pictures I don't want the rest of the internet to see. So I think Be Real is kind of doing cool
it's
stuff.
It's fun because it's safer. Yeah. It feels safer. It's a closer community,
Of
friends that you
picked
to
yeah,
a show.
Yeah, you were basically curating. So a couple of things we should mention. Elon Musk was also having some beef with. With Apple, too, there were reports that Apple was potentially looking at delisting Twitter from the App Store because of like the crazy content that wasn't being moderated anymore. And Musk replied to somebody who's like, oh, yeah, we would make our own phone if Apple or Google, delisted us. And I'm like, sure, Jan, you're going to make your own phone. Yeah. Like,
I thought that was so funny.
And I saw a lot of people running with this as news too. I'm like, guys, Elon Musk is just replying to a Twitter question. That's all he's doing. He's not getting together and
he's
making a phone.
He's not saying he's going to write his own phone. I know.
Most recently yesterday, Musk said he and Tim Cook have resolved their dispute. Apparently he went on a tour of the Apple campus with Tim Cook and they talked about this. So it seems like they're cool. I also feel like Tim Cook is just like, it's sort of like when Tim Cook met with Trump and his like panel of like science and technology people. It's like, you got to talk to this person because they have too much power. But also, I secretly hate them. Musk also says that Neuralink, you remember Neuralink, doing like
the
brain interface chip, which he's also CEO of, will start doing human trials within 6 months. So sure, we can trust this man who can't run a social network properly to plug stuff into our brains, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I believe him. Sure. That's me playing Tim Cook.
That's you playing Tim Cook.
Me as Tim Cook showing Elon Musk around the Apple campus, just going, here, you can put your money towards a lunch. And here on the Apple Fitness Center, you can run until hopefully
I mean, that thing is a spaceship, you know, so maybe in the center, I'm sure somewhere there is just like a bottomless hole on the Apple campus. Right. They call it the eye hole. I don't know. But I can imagine Tim Cook like bringing Elon Musk like, hey, come visit, buddy. Hey, look over there. Look over here. Push.
Yeah.
Well, problem solved.
When we were at Apple. Yeah. When we were on Apple Park doing WWDC and the iPhone event, the parking structure looks a lot like the Severance building, just FYI. So maybe they drop Elon Musk there and he never gets
just
there.
Just trap him. Like, really, that's the best situation.
Yeah. He can't tweet
anyway,
anymore.
Anyway, we are going to keep an eye, of course, on what's happening with Twitter and Elon. It's all very annoying. But stay tuned to Engadget.com. Carissa Bell is doing some great reporting on everything around social media. So stay tuned, folks. Let's move on to some other news real quick. We already talked about Amazon saying that they're going to be losing $10 billion from Alexa devices. That's a lot of money, but also Amazon is a company that is made to lose money until this stuff makes some money. So I wouldn't read too much into that, but they are, you know, laying off a lot of people. I feel like a lot of tech companies are following that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Sherlyn, like overall?
I'm just like thinking, how are they losing all this money? But
it's not making money.
Obviously, the article explains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so what do you, once you get an Alexa device, what do? You ask it the weather. I honestly use them every day because I play a lot of like internet radio stations. So, or just like the radio. Right. Like, I don't have a radio in most rooms in my house. So it's like, that's how I listen to NPR or something. But I'm not buying things through Alexa, even though Alexa's like, even though the Amazon speaker is being very annoying and recommending.
Well, you've said it so many times now, I feel like someone's probably muted
whatever.
Their speakers.
But it's so annoying that it keeps recommending products to you. I don't mind the subscription updates. That's kind of useful. But whenever, it says, by the way, did you know you could do this? I'm like, shut up. I wanted to know the weather. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's offering unsolicited advice is when I hate it the most. But for me, my Amazon speaker is really just kind of just languishing in the background, right? Because I have also Google speakers. And sometimes I hate my Google speakers, but they're generally smarter, generally faster. Signing into things using the Google Home app is also very easy. Like, I signed in once, and then when I moved, everything was still signed in. I was like, cool.
I mean, it really comes down to the platforms you prefer, too. So it's like, what the Amazon speaker is doing it was groundbreaking at the time, and not everybody was like putting that amount of money into like speakers that were smart, that you could talk to, that was certainly groundbreaking. But once everybody started doing it, it's like, I don't know what else Amazon has going for it. I do like controlling things. Like, I control my Hue lights. I control a lot of things. Like, it is a great smart home hub type device, but I can see why it's not making Amazon money. Like, that makes complete sense. So real quick, too, we got a bunch of other news we're going to run through. Gorilla Glass and Corning announced that there is a new Gorilla Glass. Of course, it's called the Victus 2. And I feel like every Gorilla Glass product announcement is the same. It is stronger. It can survive drops better. You'll see it soon. That's it. That's every Gorilla Glass announcement we get, right?
On phones. What if one day phone makers just stopped buying stuff from Corning? Well, they would just...
Yeah. But they are making the best thing. Like, that's the thing. I think a lot of companies are kind of stuck using Corning. Certainly Apple is, even though they don't really talk about it. And the story is that I believe, like, when the first iPhone was being built, like, Apple spent a lot of time talking to people about, like, what can we do to make, like, really strong glass for a device that is mostly glass? And they started working with Corning, and Corning, like, that innovation kind of went to everybody else. Like, we wouldn't have the modern smartphone market without strong glass, like Gorilla Glass. So it's getting better. It's called Victus 2. Deeper thoughts?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of blowing glass now.
You,
you go to the glass factory and you blow the glass, and then like it becomes a little vase or a pot.
One day I would like to go to the Corning factory to talk about this stuff.
I have been. It's so fun.
Yeah, they've tried to invite us a couple of times. I'm like, I don't want to go to random Western New York for no reason. Yeah.
I went to school in Buffalo, so Corning will have a... And it's called Corning, too, like the whole... Yep. City. I was like, all right, so let's do it.
Yeah. All those New York cities, like all those New York towns, IBM.
Albany, Rochester, Buffalo.
IBM has a place up near Rochester, I believe.
Hells yes.
Yeah. Okay. Other news, something fun. We got a second trailer of the Super Mario Brothers movie starring Chris Pratt. And I don't want to talk about the casting of Chris Pratt, but have you seen this trailer, Shalyn?
It's a me?
He actually says it's a me, even though it doesn't make sense of why he would do that. One thing I want to mention, this movie is co-produced by an animation studio. I believe it's Illumination. This movie looks really good. And I don't think enough people are talking about that. Like, it looks... The color design, the kind of backgrounds, the detail, the characters, everything. Like, compared to most other kid movies, I think there's a lot going on here. And I do think, like, that is going to be a compelling thing for kids. My daughter is, like, already very interested in checking out whatever this movie is about, and she hasn't really played Mario games. So I just think, like, I have a little more faith in what's going on here. And also the voices we hear from Jack Black and Charlie Day and whatnot, I think are... You know, I think it's good. So I think this will actually end up being better than a lot of people are expecting. We see some of the Rainbow Road. We see like Mario Kart stuff in here. We see Mario versus Donkey Kong in the trailer. It's funny. I like the gag. So I'm not just going to focus on the Chris Pratt of it all. I think there's a lot more going on with this movie. So I'm excited. Can't wait to see it. You want to talk
about... I will watch it. It sounds good.
Sherlyn, you want to talk about the Spotify Wrapped stuff as well?
Y'all, this week you could get your Spotify Wrapped for 2022 and show off to all your friends what songs you've been listening to, or just cringe in embarrassment, because for me, it's embarrassing. But this year, what Spotify is doing differently from previous years is that it's using kind of what music you've played in the last 12 months, I guess, to tell you what your personality type is, which is kind of funny to me. I'm like, oh, really? Like, all the accidental songs that my dumbass Google speakers will keep randomly playing on Spotify for me feed into my personality too? I guess so. But for me, I got the Explorer, I think, or the Voyager. The Voyager was my personality type. It's so funny, they're also using the same, like, sort of letter structure as the Myers-Briggs personality test. So it's like, my Voyager thing on Spotify corresponds to ENLC, and I forget what they stand for, but you can check that out if you have the Spotify app. I believe it's a Spotify premium feature. But every year this is like, I think this is so smart of Spotify to do, right? It has all this data about what you've listened to. It turns it into this fun little shareable nugget for you. I think it's a smart way for Spotify to A, get its name and brand out there, but B, get people interested in using the service. Because why? Like, people are going to be like, you see all the people posting these InstaFest things on social media? It's just getting people to sign up for stuff because they can create cute content with it that they can share. Same thing with Spotify Wrapped. Like, you'll get people curious to try it out. So
Spotify's, to me, they're spending a lot of time and energy collecting all of our data, right? So now they're just like kind of manufacturing it and turning it back into something that you can promote, that promotes Spotify. It is honestly a little insidious. It's fun. It's fun to share this and be like, but it's also like, Spotify sure knows a lot about me.
Be aware that you're doing free marketing for Spotify.
Spotify knows enough about me to like basically classify my personality. That seems strange.
Question, Devendra. Did you do your Spotify?
I haven't done it yet. Also, because every time I go to the app, I'm like, where do I do this? What's happening?
Oh, yeah. It needs an update to show you. It'll be one of the front tiles on the homepage.
I see my Wrapped playlist, but I don't see the, hey, show me the stories of all that stuff. So I will.
That is strange.
I gotta do some poking around. I just haven't cared enough to like really search. So
yeah. I love how also the results sometimes are like so funny, because it's like, you listened to 46 different genres today. You explored a lot. And then it told me that my top five genres were pop, K-pop, R&B, Korean R&B. I was like, that's not a lot. I don't feel like that's a lot, but thanks. It's just very granular genres. Mm-hmm, so there we go.
Absolutely. And you want to shout out something else too, right, Chilin?
So this weekend on December 3rd is the International Day of Persons with Disabilities. And Apple actually this week released a video showing some of its features that are designed with accessibility in mind. I think the video looks really nice. It was designed with and created with the people that it actually featured. So it's people who themselves have disabilities. One of the creators or the people featured in there doesn't have arms, so they use their feet to use assistive touch to do things like watch makeup tutorials, pick makeup looks. There's a musician that's visually impaired who uses their phone detection mode, their iPhone's detection mode, to see where their clothes are or see what doors have the correct labels on them to walk in to find the stage or something. So I think it's a fun way to get to know what features are actually available on Apple's products. Do we think it's a little bit more like advertising? Yes.
It's all advertising.
It is all advertising.
It's a good thing. Like, it's a good thing Apple is doing this stuff. And it does kind of push the industry forward a bit. Like, it does push other companies to be like, well, Apple's doing this, we better at least be equivalent to it, you know, or offer something like that.
Yeah. Again, as a reminder, December 3rd, International Day of Persons with Disabilities. It doesn't really mean you have to go out and I don't know, like find a person to celebrate with, but note that a lot of companies are leveraging this to highlight their accessibility features, which is like a good thing but also kind of self-serving sometimes. So let's not
it's all a balance, but I think it's good to acknowledge these days. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Let's move on to what we've been working on. And I've been off for a couple days actually around the Thanksgiving holiday, also because I know it's all gonna be CES hell and prep for now. Mm-hmm. So that is what I'm in the middle of. As soon as I sign off of this show, I'm gonna be talking to some companies. I'm going to New York next week to meet with Dell and some other folks too. So I'll be seeing Sherlyn and everybody. And I'll do the episode from there next week. But Sherlyn, what are you working on?
I spent too much money.
Oh no!
This last few days with the holiday shopping. Let us know what y'all bought during the Black Friday / Cyber Monday season, if at all, or if you didn't buy anything, tell us as well. Send us an email to podcast@engadget.com. Also, I'm working on the best and worst coverage for the year. Tell us what you thought were some of the best things in tech this year. You don't need to tell me what you thought were the worst things, because I know.
So many and bad also. Things.
We have such a long list of bad things this year.
I have a hard time thinking of any good ones. Yeah.
Exactly. Me too. My list of like good ones right now is like one thing, maybe. And then we'll see. So send us what you think were like winners this year, winners in tech. I don't want to, you know, if you want to tell me that you personally won a football match or something, sure, you can send that our way, podcast@engadget.com. But winners and losers in tech is what I'm working on, as well as other background stuff. Hey, while we're doing quick shout outs, I just want to quickly shout out to, Hey, Riley, you're listening to this in your car with your mom. So, hi, what's up? Okay, that's it. Same I think enough. So, yeah.
Let's move on to pop culture picks. And I know you want to talk about something that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, so I saw people on my Twitter / other social media platforms. No, I watched Jordan Peele's Nope for the very first time on an airplane.
Oh,
so good.
Man.
I know. I know. What about, yeah.
You really, every week, Trillin, every week, you kind of ruin something.
I know. Disappoint you. I find a way to disappoint you. It was such a good film. I went in blind. I didn't know what to expect at all. I didn't know what the premise was going to be. I know that it was going to vaguely be scary, but it was kind of scary at the start. But honestly, the rest of it was just an intriguing tale. I know it's supposed to be about spectacle and it's about, you know, America's relationship with that. But I, you know, didn't really get that until I read the reviews afterwards. I just thought it was a great science fiction movie.
Yeah, it's because the idea of a spectacle, were you watching it on the freaking airplane screen, Trillin? It's not much spectacle on like an 8-inch little tablet screen.
It was a spectacle, the people behind me. Like,
anyway, it was I love Nope. Nope was a great experience in the theaters. And that's one of those movies.
Steven Yeun, amazing.
One of those movies that you want to watch on the biggest screen you can. So even if you're watching at home, like get up close to that TV. Like it's so much fun. Cool. Anything else we want to mention about Nope?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I liked Steven Yeun, Daniel Kaluuya, obviously, and Kiki Palmer. All of them did such a great job. Brandon, I forget their last name, also great. Jordan Peele, great storyteller. So fascinating. I was so fascinated throughout. But I do have another shout out really quickly. Because we've already recommended Nope on this podcast before, I wanted to come to you with something fresh. And this is the podcast called Something Was Wrong. It is a true crime-ish podcast. My friend Michelle recommended it to me, and she was like, holy, you wanna, because me and Michelle, we get together and we talk about people who have awful lives and very dramatic stories in their lives. And this is basically Something Was Wrong. Every season they bring you a true life story of someone who's going through something really crap in their life, and basically they're just chugging through life, and then dun, dun, something was wrong. And it's like, it just kind of unfolds that drama. And we were just listening to season 9. It was very, very interesting. So if that sounds up your alley, you can check it out on wherever you get your podcasts.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Trillin. And I just briefly want to talk about Glass Onion, the sequel to Knives Out, the next
next
Benoit Blanc movie. I just saw it in theaters. It was only in theaters for 1 week. And I think Netflix made a very dumb decision to just give it a week. Because
to release it.
Everybody I see on Twitter is talking about like, oh man, my theater was so full. We all had a great time. There were a lot of people in my screening too. And it's a great crowd-pleasing movie. It is another murder mystery, very similar to the first Knives Out, but this one is set in like a Greek island run by kind of a crazy tech CEO played by Edward Norton, who's always fun. This movie is directly poking fun at Elon Musk and a lot of tech bros and tech culture in general. So I think if I have time, I'll try to write a piece about that. But it is very much, if you're listening to this podcast, I think you will enjoy a lot of this movie. It has a great cast. Great to see Daniel Craig back here. But also Dave Bautista, who's hilarious and always funny. Catherine Hahn and Janelle Monáe, my favorite. I love her so much. She is playing a very like key role in this movie. I think it is well made. It's by my boy, Rian Johnson, who I love. I remember seeing his first movie when it was a little indie movie, and I had to go to like a random theater in Hartford to go see it. And now dude has done Star Wars. He has done, you know, he has his own like little franchise here that is doing very well. This is going to be on Netflix later this month, December 23rd. So be sure to check it out. Unfortunately, can't see in theaters. I think Netflix's CEO said that maybe they would bring it back to theaters if people were interested. But that would have to be like after the Netflix premiere. It does show that people want to go to theaters. Like we want to get out of our houses and go do things and watch things. Yeah,
it just sucks that right now it's the cold season again. Everyone's getting sick with something.
It's the cold season, and we were still in the pandemic too. And it sucks that when I go to the theater here, I'm literally the only person wearing a mask. So I'm always trying to get a seat away from everybody, and it's not fun. But anyway, I think you'd enjoy A Glass Onion, Sherlyn. Yeah,
I think so too.
It's so much fun if you'll enjoy murder mysteries. Go ahead.
Final note to everyone: take care, wear your mask if you can, not just for COVID, but for everything else that's going around. You just don't want to be sick this holiday season where our immune systems are down, so just be safe. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra, not at a theater, well, at a theater, but also online at...
at Devendra on Twitter, and I talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me cute things for Riley's eyes, you can hit me up. I am at Sherlyn Lowe still on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.